New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, aliens, ghosts, and robots. It's Keith. And here in the United States, as of this recording, it's Thanksgiving. I think it's a challenge sometimes when we're feeling stressed or fearful of the future or worried about friends and family to try to find something to be thankful for. But there's a reason why gratitude journals are a thing. And there's a reason why therapists often tell us to keep track of the things that we're grateful for in order to better manage our anxieties. And that's because when you connect to the things that you're grateful for, you realize that not everything is bad. There may be bad things in your life, and these are real. There may be hardships you're facing, and these are real. And you may feel afraid, and that fear is real too. But there are things in our lives that remind us that for all the problems and fears we face, we live in a world where there are people who love us or care for us. And we do have things in our lives that can bring us a little joy, a little peace. And we are not alone. So today I am thankful for my family. I am thankful for the ability to write and share my stories with you. I'm thankful for my patrons who help support my work. And I'm thankful for you. I hope that no matter where you are, you have a great Thanksgiving and that you can find something in your life to be thankful for. Here's today's episode. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 18. Once, when I was much younger, I went hiking in one of the last Appalachian preserves. The trees were brittle and sickly, but at least there were trees, and lots of them. After an hour of walking, I had forgotten about the sprawl, the denuded mountains, the web of roads and cars. In the preserve, there was no evidence that humans had been there at all. It was peaceful and eerie at the same time. It reminded me that for all our accomplishments and hubris, the universe didn't need us. And then I stumbled upon the ramshackle remains of a cabin askew on a hillside under the trees. It had long been abandoned and was falling to pieces, but it shattered the calm I had found. Even away from it all, you couldn't get away from it all. Marley Station's appearance in the front window was a little like that moment. Even its shape reminded me of that cabin, jerry-rigged and chaotic. The station was not a single discrete entity, but a conglomeration of mismatched compartments and refurbished ship hulls linked by a tangle of cylindrical corridors. One end of the station was built into a sizable asteroid, or perhaps the station had started as a base on that rock and grown outward like a feverishly mutated weed. The largest and most central structure, though, apart from that asteroid, was a metal sphere a dozen stories across, dotted with windows and marred with char. Lights and signs of all colors and languages sputtered and sparked from the tips of steel towers and long docking arms. The whole thing rotated slowly, ominous and irregular. Out at the edge of the turning mass of compartments, a single module, kept clean and new and bedecked with communications equipment, was marked with the violet and gold ring of Shayot. even away from it all. You can't get away from it all. Agony 1 slowed as Catherine fired the forward engines. With great concentration, she aligned the top of the ship with a puckering airlock set into the station. The engines cut out, and we coasted for a few long seconds before connecting to the station with a creaking, metallic thump. I felt some weight return to me as we began to rotate with Marley, the spin simulating light gravity. We became another odd, though far more stylish, object amid its clutter. Catherine unbuckled herself from the pilot's seat.
Right. Let's see what waits for us here.
We gathered under the top hatch at the front of the lounge. The others were ready, packed, and wary, carrying their satchels and backpacks. Catherine pushed the button that opened the hatch, and almost immediately I was breathing in unfamiliar scents, spices, fragrant smoke, and the metallic funk of air processors operating many months past their scheduled cleaning. Above us is a long vertical corridor with a ladder within, and we began to ascend. We were heading up toward the large central hub of the station. The climb was easy in the light gravity, much less gravity than Mars. I felt a rhythmic vibration in the handholds, which I couldn't quite place until we're almost at the top hatch. Music. Matthew dialed the hatch open, and the strong, syncopated beat of electronic music rushed to greet us, along with trails of blue, hazy smoke, the scents of grilled meat and human sweat. One by one, we pulled ourselves into a huge, spherical room, thrumming with activity. The gravity was so light, I had to steady myself with a convenient handrail to stop my upward momentum. My feet touched the curved deck plating, riveted steel, streaked with dark residue. Marley's residence drifted past us and through the air above us, navigating the microgravity like dancers. They were mostly men, strong and gritty-looking, in workmen's clothing and industrial pressure suits. And they gathered at bolted-down tables and laughed and talked in a fast patois. I saw a lot of Caribbean and Filipino faces, and more than a few turned to look at us. A crash above me drew my attention. What I saw was startling. A spherical chain-link cage secured in the middle of the room by taut metal guide wires. Inside, a pair of men leaped and tumbled at each other, swinging wooden batons that reminded me of police nightsticks. The men slammed against the fence, planting their feet and launching themselves back towards each other in the near weightlessness. They twirled and spun, kicking and swinging as they passed, sweat flying out in all directions. One of the men flipped his baton over and used its crossguard like a hook, catching his opponent's elbow and yanking him out of his trajectory to leave him spinning helplessly in the middle of the cage while he himself drifted back to the fence to prepare for another pass. The men were keenly attuned to the beat of the music, turning this sparring into a dance, synchronizing their turns and leaps to the rhythm surrounding us. Scattered around the sphere, a thin crowd of Marleyans cheered the spectacle on, watching from the ceiling or walls or... It's hard to find a proper name for these things in a spherical room where directions are relative. Beyond the cage, throughout this huge space, were more tables, more hatches, more people, mismatched kiosks and improvised vending carts, lights of different color and design pointing this way and that. A man approached us. He is dark-skinned and wore a tank top that clung to his muscular torso and a pair of baggy pants with elastic cuffs. His hair was a riot of dreadlocks tied back by a colorful woven cord, but in the low gravity, the tips of his locks floated behind him, bobbing and swaying. In his hand, he carried a string of small, transparent balloons, little plastic bags filled with a clear liquid, each punctured by a straw. As he neared, his shrewd eyes swept over us with suspicion, but his manner was polite as he touched down on the floor near us.
"Welcome. I am Eric Baptiste, foreman of Marley Station. You are Sister Lucy. I did not think to ever meet you.
He held out one of the clear bags to her, and she took it with a dip of her head.
I am grateful for your hospitality, Mr. Baptiste.
She placed the straw between her lips and sipped, nodding again in appreciation at whatever it was she just tasted.
I understand you received some mail recently.
A quiet understanding passed between them then.
I did. I passed it along. Who has seen it? Only I, and Aubrey Barbeis. Evan was desperate to send it here. Did he?
Lucy shook her head, solemnly and sadly. Baptiste glanced away, setting his jaw, until Lucy interrupted his thoughts.
How is Aubrey?
Baptiste began passing out the flasks. He looked at each of us in turn with a hard, evaluating gaze, but there was no sense that he begrudged the hospitality.
He fades. He lingers, as they all do. If you have business with him, then you should do it. He is a ghost now.
Baptiste had come to me, and as he studied my face, his expression turned grim.
And he is not the only one, I take.
Was it so obvious? Lucy intervened before I had time to think of something to say to that.
I would like to use your infirmary for the test.
And so you shall.
He then offered me one of the balloon flasks. It felt cool in my fingers.
This is star water. We mine it ourselves. Refresh yourself.
He clapped me on the shoulder and turned away. I sipped from the flask. It's water, cold and clear and crisp. It tasted wonderful. Baptiste drifted back onto his heels as he turned back to Lucy, folding his arms over his chest.
What have you brought with you, sister?
Oliver was watching the combatants above, sucking and squeezing on his nearly empty flask. Matthew stayed near Lucy, eyes on Baptiste, his manner strong but respectful. Catherine seemed to be doing her best not to draw attention to herself, staying near me and glancing around the room. I guess I didn't blame her.
They are with me. I vouch for them.
No, not them. If you are here, then something is following you, I think.
You are right. I'm sorry to bring trouble to your doorstep. We have been pursued, but it is our hope that we have lost them. Still, the sooner we get what we have come for and leave, the better for you and your facility.
Baptiste tossed his head, his locks flaring like a lion's mane, a contemptuous curl tugging at his lip.
We have locked arms with Babylon before and won.
I do not doubt your courage and strength. All the same, it would be better if we were to see to our business and be gone.
All right, then.
He pointed to a hatch on the far side of the sphere, flanked on either side by a booth selling video slivers and a man pulling strips of synthetic meat from a tank and cooking them on a clamshell grill.
Barwise salvage is all the way at the rim. Section 7, past the machine shop. Follow the blue doors spinward. Blue doors lead to the rim, red doors lead to the core. I will have a medic meet you there for the test.
Catherine gave Baptiste a smile.
Hi, I'm the pilot. I'm going to need refueling before we go.
Baptiste let a smile play over his lips at that.
I'll see to it. Fuel is expensive out here, but with a ship like yours, I'm sure you can afford it.
She stuck out one of her hips to rest her hand on it, fingers drumming lightly there as she smiled back, turning on the charm.
Shouldn't be a problem, Mr. Baptiste. I work for a distributor of erotic products and entertainments. Maybe we can discuss if there's anything you and your crews might be interested in.
Baptiste's smile turned wolfish.
Just you and I. We don't have much out here, but what I have might surprise you.
You're not the only one with surprises.
All right, that was enough of that.
We should get going, Catherine.
Matthew spoke up for the first time.
Yes, time is short.
With a chuckle, Baptiste gave Catherine a little bow.
another time, then.
He pushed off the floor with his toes and joined a crowd of miners gathered above us. Catherine nudged me in my side.
It's just business.
Lucy was already taking long, gliding steps toward the hatch Baptiste had pointed out to us.
Business, yes. Let us get to it.
Matthew fell into step behind her.
Oliver.
The other man was transfixed on the competition in the cage.
Let's go.
Yeah, all right.
With Oliver in the rear, we went, gliding past makeshift stalls, computer terminals, vines of cables, and through the hatch. The Marlians kept their eyes on us, but didn't hinder us. Navigating through Marley was cramped and confusing. The station was as cobbled together and haphazard inside as out. Habitat modules were connected by pressurized tubes. Tubes lead to improvised structures, which in turn were attached to more modules and tubes, and everywhere there were hatches of different configurations and designs. The compartments were all made of different materials, built in different decades, and all cramped. I had to frequently duck my head or steady my trajectory with a handhold to keep from colliding with doorways or ceilings, or floors, for that matter. Up and down aren't always the same from one compartment to the next. Everything was spliced together and improvised, repairs upon repairs. And yet, somehow, the station held together against the vacuum outside. We were passing through a hydroponic bay with leafy plant shoots sprouting from holes in the plastic walls when I caught up with Sister Lucy.
So, Baptiste, is he a member of the Invisible Sun as well?
She nodded as she ducked under a row of dwarf banana trees.
Yes, and most of the people here support our cause, even if they are not formally members of our group. Marley is the last of the independent mining outposts. They successfully resisted a takeover by SMSS a few years back, and they have no love for Shayot either. They know about the plague all too well. But there was a Shayot facility attached to this station. That is the gate control for the Marley Gate. Marley is forced to form an uneasy truce with them. They need the gate to ship their ores back to Earth, but the demand for their ore is high. So much so that if their shipments stopped, Shayot would feel the pressure from the manufacturers to let them through again. Shayot maintains a small crew here to operate the gate, and so long as there is no trouble, peace remains. Wait, aren't we trouble? Won't the Shayot personnel here come for us? They must know we've arrived. I am assuming either they do not know we are wanted, or Marley's security is keeping them from doing anything. Besides, they have only a handful of people here. The thing they are most likely to do is send a message back to Mars, which would take an hour or so to be received. Another hour to send something back, longer to put together a team to come get us. In any case, I think we have enough time to get what we need. So, this Baptiste, you trust him?
I do.
He is a man of conscience and a man of faith. He will not betray us.
Matthew dialed open a blue door.
Here, Section 7.
About bloody time they put a sign up.
As we ducked our heads and pulled ourselves through the hatch, something was still nagging at me.
But I don't understand. You said the people here know about the plague, and yet they still use the gates to ship their ore back to Earth. Isn't that hypocritical? Aren't they contributing to the problem, not to mention endangering themselves? They understand all this. It is a difficult choice they have made. Marley Station was here before we fully understood the nature of the gate plague. They have chosen to continue their work because it is profitable. They do this for the money?
I expected mercenary callousness from the huge conglomerates like SMSS, but not from an independent facility like Marley, which supposedly opposed them.
Not merely for the money, but for what the money can do. They could not make nearly the profits they do without the gates. And they used that money to fight against Shayot and the others. How?
She shot a glance over at Catherine.
If there's time later, I'll show you.
We were moving through the machine shop Baptiste had mentioned, a refurbished cargo bay filled with the noise of fabricators and showers of sparks as workers made repairs and recycled materials. Once we had gone through the noise, I turned back to Lucy.
How did Evan come to join you?
She pursed her lips a little, in thought.
Well, you knew about his wife.
Yes, Priya. She was my friend, too. She died of a rare cancer about a year after I met them, and she...
Oh. Of course.
She had the gate plague, didn't she?
Sister Lucy nodded soberly.
It broke his heart.
Yes. He adored her. He never really let on how much it hurt him, but I could see it.
I do not think he ever really believed what the doctors told him about her illness. He kept on digging, putting pieces of the puzzle together. He eventually attended meetings and became involved. That was when I noticed him and saw his passion and ability. I never knew. He never let on. It is not the sort of thing that people believe easily, and it is something you must struggle with yourself over time. Faith, belief, the search for truth, these are all deeply personal things. But the plague is a question of science or physics, not religion, isn't it?
Lucy smiles, wan and distant, her tired eyes looking off at something unseen.
What is faith? The belief that something is real without evidence for it. It is choosing a truth. It is belief despite contradiction or uncertainty. And that is a powerful thing. Matthew.
Matthew glanced back, pausing a moment. Everyone watched as Sister Lucy approached the much taller man and gently touched the invisible sun tattoo over his throat.
Our symbol, a circle of triangles, styled like the rays of the sun. But there is no circle. There are only 8 triangles arranged in such a way that you think you see a circle. A sun that is not there, but yet it is. It's a fine optical illusion, sister, but with respect, there isn't a sun there. You could have faith in something that isn't real at all. I'm sort of surprised you'd take that position, honestly.
Because I am a nun.
Yes. I imagine the church would prefer if you didn't introduce doubt into the whole faith thing.
There are a lot of people in the church who would disapprove of my choices and my point of view.
A cloud crossed her expression, something troubling her for a moment before she pushed it aside.
But there is always doubt in faith. Faith without doubt is not faith at all. It is a kind of willing blindness, a refusal to take responsibility for one's own beliefs. And now Evan and the others found evidence about the plague? That is what we hope.
Matthew stopped at a Y-shaped junction.
Here it is.
At the end of one of the arms of the Y is a hatch stenciled with Barwise Salvage. Lucy was moving ahead quickly to the door.
Wait, if faith needs doubt, what does that mean if you have evidence? What happens to faith when you have proof?
But she didn't hear me. She touched a panel next to the door and hurried through as it opened. Excitement in her eyes. No. Fervor. An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms, and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it, and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server, or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to InvisibleSunPod.com for more information.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.